D-Mace, Finnegan, and Donick, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, broadcasting from the Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville Studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. And we are presented by Bet365. Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, David Janes here with you. Derek Mason is back today, but he will be joining Jake Lyman from 3 to 6 today and tomorrow, as Jared takes yet another vacation. Although I did see Jared is co-hosting, or did co-host because it's over now. Jared co-hosted a show on Sirius XM with Caroline Fenton today. So I guess Jared's not really on vacation.
Yeah,
he's just on vacation from us. Who's to say?
What's up with that?
What is up with that indeed? I do also want to give a shout out to our sister station, Totally Hits 93.3. Because Willie, they played back-to-back two of my all-time favorite songs, one right after the other, and it put me in a great mood. Enjoy the Silence by Depeche Mode, immediately followed by Your Love by The Outfield, one right after the other. You could not have asked for a better double whammy than that.
Solid 1-2 punch there. Maybe David can run it back. We have access to their library, I'm sure. Us being in the same building, right? We could bring that back out of a break.
We'll see.
The Silence, by the way. I had the album, Violator.
Violator, yes.
Depeche Mode, back in the day. Went to the concert when they were on tour at the Sun Dome in Tampa back in the day. Great show. I've seen Depeche Mode a couple times.
Before we came on the air, I found Jim from Woody and Jim, and I said, excellent choices of songs right there. Excellent choices.
What did he say?
He agreed.
He did?
Yes.
Okay. I didn't see those guys. They haven't, they move with the times. They're going back to the classics with those hits. So I'm wondering what their favorites are in their library. So I didn't know if they would concur with your assessment, but I'm all in on both of those songs.
One of our texters, Dylan, on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I love how Jared is always on top of JG. Who's JG? Maybe he meant JS, Jeffrey Simmons, or Chigakonkwo? I don't know. I love how Jared is always on top of JG for taking vacations and not focusing on his job when he's doing the exact same thing right now. LOL. We're just having fun. But I did find it interesting that Jared is on vacation, yet still found time to co-host a Sirius XM program this morning with Caroline Fenn. So
it's a complicated human.
That's one way to describe Jared Stillman. That is for sure. So, Willie, yesterday we mentioned on the show that the NHL schedule was going to be released. It has indeed been released. The Nashville Predators will open the season October 9th at home against the Columbus Blue Jackets. And we are not going to do a full schedule analysis, but I know that you take a good hard look at the schedule because that's your travel schedule. That was the first thing that I thought when I looked at the schedule. I said, I wonder when Willie's not going to be here. And as you looked at this schedule, I know there were a few things that stood out to you.
As we speculated, when you have an Olympic break that everybody's got, and then on top of it, you've got a break in the schedule for the Global Series in Stockholm, you create a lot of congestion in the other parts of the schedule. And so I was holding my breath because you knew it was not going to be easy to read. Because these are wonderful things, right? I think we're very much looking forward, especially after the Four Nations. I think the Olympics this year, with all of the best players playing for the first time in a long time, that's going to be a tremendous tournament. And the Stockholm trip is going to be memorable, I'm sure. It's going to be great. But the price you pay on the other side is a very compressed schedule. So there's some really funky road trips in there. I think the travel is going to be a big theme of the season, the challenge of the season. For example, there's 13 back-to-backs, which is not a huge number. It's a little high for them, but it's to be expected with what we talked about. But five home road back-to-backs. That's a lot. But you got to get the games in somehow, right? Three home back-to-backs. That's high. You usually don't see the Predators, especially with control of the building the way they have. Like they're the number one tenant, not like some teams that share the building with the NBA. Those teams might, like the Rangers, they might have to play more home back-to-backs. Three home back-to-backs is not usually what the Predators try to do. They try to take advantage of that they control the dates and they can spread out their home games a little easier. So that's a big one. And how about this road trip for you? And it's not all in one shot, but first of all, the holidays, Thanksgiving, going to be on the road the day before and the day after Thanksgiving. That's no fun. And before Christmas, you end with an up and back to Minnesota. You have, again, the travel day of game on December 27th. It's a deja vu because last year on December 27th, remember how well they had played going into Christmas? Really well. And you had a little bit of hope. Then they went to St. Louis and got destroyed out of the gate. You get a rematch in that. Same thing. Why they have to do that 2 years in a row against the same team? I don't understand that. I think it's a disadvantage for the road team. I could be wrong. And then after that, you have this road trip. Utah, Vegas, Seattle, Calgary, Edmonton.
Yikes.
That's a long, long road trip. So seven straight on the road all told. So you balance it out with they have a lot of home stretches and things like that. They'll have to make do. The schedule is the schedule. I'm sure every team looks at their schedule and complains to some degree. But this one, I think, is unique to me.
The Predators' longest homestand of the season is right out of the gate in October, which is no surprise. That's what it usually is. They have a five-game homestand from October 21st through 28th against Anaheim, Vancouver, Los Angeles, Dallas, and Tampa Bay. But now we know the Predators' schedule. We know that our show will be back at Bridgestone Arena October 9th for the season opener against the Columbus Blue Jackets. Stephanie on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, fellow Depeche Mode fans and you guys talk Preds. That is the sweetest perfection. If you know Violator, you get that reference.
I'm with you.
We hear you, Stephanie.
That's one of the lesser known tracks from that album, but if you know, you know.
You know.
Here's one more for you. You tell me what the scheduling sense is for this. The one trip to California, unfortunately, this is another drag for those of us who enjoy the NHL cities.
But you know what? I did think of you early in the season, first road trip, back-to-back, I believe in Ottawa and Toronto, day off in Montreal.
Yes!
I saw that for you, and I said, Willie's going to love this.
I think Hal Gill's eyes perked up when he saw that. He's like, oh, okay, we're off to a good start.
Early October, day off in Montreal.
Yeah, that's not all bad. We will take full advantage, because we've had some back-end of back-to-backs in Montreal. So, again, in the enjoy the league's finer places, tell me what sense this makes. We get the draw of there's two trips to Western Canada, only one to California. Sometimes it's flip-flopped. So, and both of the trips to Western Canada are in the dead of winter. So get the layers, get the overcoat. But here's the trip to California. You tell me what sense this makes. April. April 2nd at Los Angeles. April 4th at San Jose. Okay. April 6th at Los Angeles. Why don't we just stay in Los Angeles and play two games? What's up with that? I've never seen that before.
We need to find the NHL equivalent of our friend Mike North from the NFL.
Yes.
And have him on.
Well, the guy exists, and he gets pummeled every year at the broadcast meetings. And to his credit, he stands up there, and he takes the questions.
So you make sure you ask him at these broadcast meetings.
I will. The general question I think a lot of people have every year, because I think this happened last year, maybe Seattle, if I'm thinking that correctly. But there was another time. This Winnipeg is another one where it just seems much more reasonable. Go up and play them twice. Have Winnipeg come down here and play twice. Save the gas, you know? I know the sentiment is you know, there's different people are hurt, different people coming into the lineup, out of the lineup, the building of availability. But there's got to be a better way. Just let's play some two-game series. And it doesn't have to be home and home. You can play two straight games in the same building. I've come around to that. But 4 days apart? What are we doing?
I remember several years ago when the Winnipeg Jets became the Winnipeg Jets, and before the former Atlanta Thrashers moved into the Central Division, the Winnipeg Jets played a season in the Southeast Division with geographic rivals Washington, Carolina, Florida, right, and Tampa Bay.
Because they were Atlanta, right?
They were Atlanta. So Winnipeg spent a year in the Southeast Division.
Yes.
And I remember as I was living in Washington and covering the Capitals at the time, the Capitals went up there and stayed for a few days and played a couple games in Winnipeg because it didn't make sense to go back and forth.
But why aren't we still doing that?
That's a question for the scheduling man.
Especially with Utah and Seattle in the league, two Western teams that take a while to get to, this should be a bigger part, I think, of the schedule. So the Predators will play at L.A., day off, at San Jose, day off, back to L.A., and then, which happens a lot, back-to-back
with Anaheim.
Yep. And then off to Utah.
Makes sense.
That's another, it's another really, really taxing road trip there.
That'll be an interesting one to pack for in terms of what kind of clothes you bring.
Yeah, like April in Salt Lake, you feel like you got a shot to not freeze?
We will revisit this.
We will.
But the Predators' schedule is out. They open the season at home against Columbus on October 9th. Now, Willie, we sports talk radio hosts, we come from different walks of life. We have different approaches to this craft. We have different influences. But there is one thing that we all have in common. We love lists. We all love lists, especially at this time of year.
Oh, yes.
There is nothing better than
a good list.
Than a good list. And The Athletic heard our prayers. The Athletic answered those prayers by ranking all 136 projected starters in FPS for this coming college football season.
We've got to talk to Mitch Light about this. I wonder.
This is for the sickos.
Yeah.
136 FBS projected starters. It's one thing when it's the NFL and you have 32? And that's difficult enough. 136 FBS projected starters ranked by Sam Kahn Jr. and Antonio Morales over at The Athletic.
I'm going to get a quote from Mitch Light before this show is over. I feel like he'll respond. He's a regular contributor to our show.
He is
one of the editors at The Athletic. He once edited one Adam Vingan.
And still edits Joe Rexroad.
Still edits Joe Rexroad. Did he have to edit this list of 136 college football quarterbacks? Because that's his area right now is college football.
To put it into perspective, number 136, Josh Johnson, the projected quarterback at Air Force. He is at the bottom of the list.
Can you imagine Josh seeing this and calling home, Mom, I'm at 136. Like, and then his buddies from home texting say, like, he needs the right friend group, I think, for support when you're at 136. Right?
Yes.
And you've got, the message's got to be, you are not 136. You are not. You are no lower than 119. And your goal is to get inside of the top 110.
So the only place you can go, Josh Johnson,
is up.
This
is the positive spin that his friend group, his mom, his family need.
So I was curious, of course, to see where some of the local/semi-local quarterbacks would be on this list. Diego Pavia, number 15 on the list of 136. He's in tier two. Tier two is described as winners who have proven their mettle. They can carry the team but may have limitations when it comes to certain traits or question marks about their consistency. So, Diego Pavia, number 15. And the blurb within Pavia's little box here, Quote, Pavi is not the biggest, strongest, or fastest, but he produces. He led SEC quarterbacks with 801 rushing yards. He's slippery, able to elude elite SEC rushers, whether scrambling to throw or looking for ground gains, and his competitive edge is off the charts. His performance in the Commodores' win over Alabama will live in SEC lore, but he's also the biggest reason they logged their first winning record since 2013. He's accurate in the RPO game and underneath throws, a Group of Five head coach said, but he's the epitome of what you want in an alpha. So Diego Pavia, the 15th ranked FBS starting quarterback out of 136.
It's so hard.
To The Athletic.
It's, you know, when we do this for the NFL, it's a lot easier to reference all of the other quarterbacks above and below on the immediate part of the list and say, okay, I think he's better than this guy. I don't think he's as good as this guy. This is wrong. But you just have such a small, you know, a limited feel for a list that's so long. So 15 was a little bit surprisingly high for me. I would have thought top 25, but 15 is strong. But that's a really good assessment of what his strengths are. He's not an athletic freak. He wills himself to making plays. He is sneaky accurate on the run under pressure. He has a great feel for the offense. He has mastered that offense. If he can take one more step forward with the downfield throws, and they can give him a little more protection so he has time to make those downfield throws. And then the other element is, can they come up with one more ingredient that's a threat down the field? That would help him a lot maintain this. If he ends the season as the 15th best quarterback in the country, I think good things would be happening over on West End.
So some other notable names that have Tennessee ties. Josh Hoover from TCU, who you may recall, the Volunteers reportedly tried to sway.
Poach,
yes.
Tamper. Sorry, I didn't mean to say tamper.
Josh Hoover is number 9 on this list at TCU. Arch Manning at number 10. Nico Iamaleava. Number 19.
Has anybody ever heard of this guy?
Number 19. It says here he plays for UCLA. So Nico Iamaleava at 19. Joey Aguilar, the projected quarterback for the Tennessee Volunteers, leads off Tier 5 at number 60. So there you go. I also do want to give a shout-out. I have to find him here. David, you could help me properly pronounce his last name. Nicholas Vadiato, the return Vadiato for Middle Tennessee, number 80 on the list.
All right.
But Diego Pavia, I was surprised by 15 as well. I agree with you. When I clicked on this, I expected to see Pavia in the top 25. He is in Tier 2. The top 10 just for kicks and giggles in Tier 1. Kay Klubnik from Clemson, number 1. Garrett Nussmeier of LSU, number 2. Lenora Sellers of South Carolina, number 3. John Mateer from Oklahoma, number 4. DJ Lagway of Florida, number 5. Drew Aller of Penn State, number 6. Sam Levitt of Arizona State, number 7. Kevin Jennings from SMU, number 8. Josh Hoover from TCU, number 9. And Arch Manning of Texas, number 10.
Lagway is an interesting one to be that high. Top 5. And he really gave Florida a ton of life. But that's high expectations now. Number 5, that's and with their schedule, that's going to be put to the test. And so I'm curious what he has for an encore. I'm actually curious to read more about it because Beck, like going into last year, Beck would have been probably pretty high on this list. I don't know if they did this last year.
He's number 12.
He's number 12 this year. Sort of towards the top of Tier 2, I think, with Beck. I want to know if he's going to be feeling any effects from the injury. It was his throwing arm, right, that got hurt. I mean, that would seem to be pretty important.
Yes.
Like, they don't even mention it, really, on here, do they? Elbow injury, but nobody questions his arm talent or his ability, but I don't see, at least in this evaluation, that they feel like that's going to have any lasting effect. But I'd feel better once I saw him in action overcome this. One more thing about Iumalava. This is an interesting one. They have on this, because I love how they do this at The Athletic. They have sort of the college profile. Here's what he's done. Here's the story. We know Nico's story. But then they have scouting take. So this is interesting to me because Nico's, once all of the you-know-what hit and they're scrambling, they're not getting the money they thought they were going to get. Not as many teams are pandering for him as maybe they thought with the timing of it. Reportedly, he's taking a lot less money, or maybe let's just argue the same money that he was getting at Tennessee and not a big pay raise, right? Is that fairly accurate?
I would say
so. If not less?
If I recall correctly.
So the spin was, well, this is the program that's going to get him to the NFL. He wants to go to the NFL. And it's about the fit. It's about protection. Remember, he had cracked his helmet a couple of times. He had taken some big shots. And so UCLA, magically, is going to be the place where he gets that. Now, we'll find out. Scouting take. A tall, skinny athlete with quick feet and an even quicker release. This is Nico. He's a good deep ball thrower when he's set. I would agree with that. And he has enough arm talent to drive the ball down the middle into tight windows. He was really good in that particular area against Vanderbilt. He carved them up. Remember, Vanderbilt hit them with a big knockdown punch early, and Nico had to play well in that game for them to get back, but that was one of his better games. He's also inconsistent with his drops, however, and an average processor. I think that's being kind, right? That's probably his biggest flaw in terms of what Tennessee fans think of him. It's hard to tell if his success is in the veer and shoot offense, for which he's perfect, will translate into the NFL. Now, is that to imply that the veer and shoot offense is what UCLA is going to run?
I can't say I know much about UCLA football.
Well, it's going to be different, right? And this is what they've been selling from the Nico camp, a.k.a. his dad, and whoever's advising his dad, that this will be a better fit for his pro prospects. So Nico in the Big Ten. Yes, UCLA is in the Big Ten.
Ugh.
Side note from Pat Forty in that big
scheduling
thing that he did. It was amazing. He got all these nuggets. But he noted in the Big Ten, when you jumped a couple of time zones, which you do a few times, especially when UCLA is involved, the road teams did very poorly in those games. So UCLA is going to be up for some challenges here with Nico. That's going to be fun to watch. I think we're going to watch more UCLA football than we normally do in this fall.
Wes in Clarksville says, is number 136 the new Mr. Irrelevant, LOL? Josh Johnson of Air Force, I believe in you.
We're going to check Josh throughout the season.
You better watch out, Devin Cargman of Kent State at 135, or Gavin Wimsatt of Jacksonville State at 134. Or even Chase Jenkins of Rice at 133. Josh Johnson, nowhere to go but up. I believe in you, Josh Johnson.
He's going to dark mode.
Yes, he is. 615-737-1025. Our phone and text lines are driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Of course, we are on from 9 to 12 this week because Chase and Big Joe are live at SEC Media Days, and our coverage is sponsored by Brewhouse South. Experience Nashville's ultimate sports and brew hangout at Brewhouse South in Cool Springs. I do want to touch on an interesting story that I read about the SEC in, of all places, The Wall Street Journal. I thought it was interesting. It was an interesting look at the SEC's place in the college football landscape, because there is a word used in this story that I don't think I've ever associated with the SEC. And we'll get to that next. 615-737-1025. Willie Donick, Adam Vingan, 1025-1063, The Game. D. Mace Vingan and Donick, 1025-1063, The Game. We will not enjoy the silence, because silence doesn't make for good radio. If we just sat here and enjoyed the silence, dead air wouldn't be good. But I love that song from Depeche Mode. So thank you, David.
You're welcome.
So SEC Media Days concludes today. It's an interesting group of teams. Arkansas, Kentucky, Missouri, and Texas A&M will wrap up SEC Media Days today. Chase and Big Joe will wrap up their coverage from SEC Media Days today, again from noon to 3. A good interview yesterday, Willie, with SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey on the Chase and Big Joe show. So if you missed that, you can find it wherever you get your podcast. A really good interview yesterday from Chase and Joe with Greg Sankey. So I stumbled across this story in, of all places, the Wall Street Journal, with the headline, "The SEC confronts a new college football opponent. Panic. After back-to-back
panic.
After back-to-back seasons without a national championship, the swaggering Southeastern Conference is feeling unusually uneasy about its place atop the sport." This was written by Will Demel, I believe that's how you pronounce it, of the Wall Street Journal, live from Atlanta. That's where the byline is. Hmm. And here is part of that story. Quote,
so he's sensing panic in Atlanta?
Here is part of what he wrote. Quote, "But as this year's SEC Media Days got underway in Atlanta this week, the vibe has been a little different. After back-to-back seasons in which the once-dominant conference has been shut out of the national title game and forced to watch someone else take home the trophy, the SEC's swaggering sense of pride has been replaced by something else, something that felt more like unease or anxiety, or in some cases, good old-fashioned panic." A quote from Paul Feinbaum, "You don't play in the championship for 2 years and it feels like the end of the world. You have to be honest about it." So I thought this was interesting because the SEC will tell you it just means more to play in the SEC. You may have heard that once or twice before. And we know that the SEC has been the dominant conference in college football. As the story notes, between, well, let me rephrase that. The SEC, a combination of Alabama, Georgia, LSU, and Florida, won the national championship 13 times in 17 seasons through 2022. But the Big Ten has won the national championship in each of the past two seasons. Ohio State this past season, Michigan the year before. In fact,
Michigan cheated, you know, with the signals. They got the plays from the other teams. I'm just kidding.
Let's not open that Pandora's box right now. Not only has the SEC not won the national title the past two seasons, the SEC has not appeared in the national title game in each of the past two seasons. It was Ohio State versus Notre Dame and Michigan versus Washington. So here's my trivia question for you, Willie Donick. When was the last time the SEC went at least three consecutive years without winning the national championship in college football?
Ooh, I'm obviously not cheating. This is very look-upable. I am going to say not since, I'm going to say the mid-90s, the run of Nebraska.
You're
Nebraska,
close.
Colorado, Georgia Tech was in there, early 90s.
By my quick math, it was four consecutive years between 1999 and 2002.
Okay.
Florida State in 1999, Oklahoma, who was not in the SEC at the time, in 2000.
Right. Josh Heupel, quarterback, by the way.
Miami in 2001. In Ohio
loaded
State
team.
In 2002.
Upset Miami in a controversial game.
So it's been
Craig Krenzel at quarterback. That was the Maurice Claret, Jim Tressel year.
It's been more than 20 years since the SEC went at least three consecutive years without winning the national title. So, Willie, should the SEC feel at all uneasy about its place atop college football?
No. Now, let's forget about the 2 years in a row. Because I think the key question out of this, the panic is, you know, that's a clickbait kind of word. Nobody's panicking. It's the best conference in the country. The question, especially with all the playoff format talk and strength of schedule talk, is they chose to bring Texas and Oklahoma in. And the question was asked by me, why do you want them? You are now flooding and you're creating a situation where everybody's going to beat up on one another. And what happened last year where you had three or four teams on the bubble, right? You had Ole Miss, South Carolina, surprisingly went up on the bubble late in the year. They got into the discussion. Obviously, Alabama. So there's three right there. I think you know, until it maybe when you go to 16, it's going to be different. But no matter how you slice it, the league is now, the more teams you have in there that are all really good and all have a lot of resources, you're going to have this a lot. You're not going to have the superpower at the top of the league every year. And so what happened last year, the superpower, Georgia, their quarterback got hurt. It's hard to win with your backup quarterback. I don't care how good your program is. When you lose your quarterback, it's hard to win. So those are the two things that happened. A, they didn't get as many people into the 12-team format as they thought they were going to. True?
Yes.
I would have thought for sure they were going to get another team in there. What'd they end up with, two?
Off the top of my head.
Georgia, and who else got in?
Texas.
That's it, right? There was all that discussion of Alabama, Ole Miss. Ole Miss lost late. Alabama lost the extra game that they shouldn't have lost. Somewhere in there, I'm not taking anything away from it. They lost to Vanderbilt. There was still an argument that
Tennessee,
they should have gotten it.
Tennessee.
Right, so they got three. I would have thought they were really going to get four.
Tennessee,
right?
Texas.
And Georgia. Yeah, sorry. My apologies, Tennessee. Because people are like, Willie, Tennessee, man. What are you, shortchanging the Big Orange? I would have thought in a 12-team field, you would reasonably get four. And I think going forward, look, this may be the last year we have 12, and we got to recalibrate how many teams get in there. But the point is, when you have to win more games, the more teams you have in there is a big thing. And then your best team, Georgia, lost their quarterback. So there are circumstances. But I think the philosophical question for the league is, okay, you chose this. You got 16 teams now. You've got a ton of teams that are heavy, heavy, heavyweights. Are you eating each other up and decreasing the chances that you're going to end up with a team winning the national championship as often as historically? I think that's a question.
615-737-1025. My question to all of you, which Willie has immediately shut down, but has offered some good philosophical follow-ups. Should the SEC feel uneasy about its place atop college football, knowing that the Big Ten has won the past two national championships, the SEC has not appeared in the past two national championship games, and if they go another year without winning the national title, it'll be the first time in roughly 20-ish years, close to 25 years, since the SEC went three consecutive years without winning the national title. 615-737-1025. I want to get back into the story. There are some other interesting notes in it. Also, a report yesterday about the college football playoff format that I want to discuss as well. 615-737-1025. Let me tell all of you right now not to miss out on some of Nashville's best deals. Go to thegamenashville.com/deals now, and you can purchase half off gift cards for Mellow Mushroom, Red's Hot Chicken, Staley Chicago Italian Dining, Single Tree Barbecue, 312 Pizza, Bad Axe Throwing, Barrio Burrito Bar, and many more. Oh, that's the good stuff.
Another really good album from start to finish. It's kind of underrated. Like, The Outfield doesn't have like seven albums. Like, oh my gosh, the greatest hits of The Outfield for a decade. It was a little bit of a short run for them, but Play Deep, which is a great name for the album.
Yes.
When your name is The Outfield.
Indeed.
It's a great album, start to finish. Strong.
93.3 put me in the perfect mood this morning when right before our show went on the air, they played Enjoy the Silence by Depeche Mode and Your Love by The Outfield back to back. So I came in here in a fabulous mood. But let's get to
And you're not even a child of the 80s.
I am not. Well,
I'm coming back to my high school days.
Technically,
here in the outfield.
I am.
Put the cassette tape in.
I was born in the 80s.
Okay.
In March of 1989, so I got in at the tail end. I snuck in at the end.
A lot of great memories from June of 89, yes. December of 89.
A lot of great memories from when I was an infant.
And the turn of the clock to the 90s. I spent my turn of the clock to the 90s, the new decade, in the Holiday Inn Vanderbilt.
Ah.
We had quite the night.
I'm sure you did.
Back in the day, the men's basketball team, the women's basketball team, and the swim team would stay in the... They kicked everybody out of the dorm, so all three of those teams were practicing in season. So we had the run of the hotel, and we didn't burn the building down or anything. We did a really good job having our fun under control.
Praise Jesus. Times.
Or great so times. You say now.
So we say now.
So we have a lot of reaction to this. The Wall Street Journal had a reporter at SEC Media Days, Will Demel. And he came back with this story with the headline, quote, "The SEC confronts a new college football opponent. Panic after back-to-back seasons without a national championship. The swaggering Southeastern Conference is feeling unusually uneasy about its place atop the sport." So that was my question to all of you at 615-737-1025. Should the SEC feel uneasy about its place atop college football? One texter says, "I'm a Big Ten fan, and even I know that the SEC is still better than the Big Ten. But the Big Ten is doing everything it can recently to push the SEC. But if it continues to happen for two or three more years, they do have to say the Big Ten is better."
Oh, if it happens for two or three more years? It's a big if.
One texter says, "Big is right there with the SEC, and they bring in a significant amount more money than the SEC, which Greg Sankey is jealous of." Now, here was another part of this story, Willie. Beyond, quote, "Beyond the conference's two-year title drought, there have been other worrisome signs of weakness. Last November, quarterback Bryce Underwood, the number one recruit in the 2025 class, reneged on a commitment to LSU and signed with Michigan instead. That came 1 year after wide receiver phenom Jeremiah Smith spurned Florida, Georgia, and Alabama to sign with Ohio State. Then shortly after Ohio State was crowned a national champion in February, the Buckeyes topped a new analysis as the most valuable program in all of college football."
Ohio State is a juggernaut and will continue to be for a long time. Michigan also is a potential juggernaut. What we want to see is the fallout from the Harbaugh leaving and the, if you want to call it a scandal or whatever, they got their national title. We see what that program is capable of and should be. But the advantage that those two teams, and I would probably throw USC as a kind of a sleeping giant. I'm curious how they work into this equation in the coming years, if they can get back to what they were doing. But obviously their formula changes, and that the travel that just we talked about is going to be a hindrance to them. They're going to play some cold weather games. They're going to have some time zone switches that make it more challenging, I think, to just roll through a schedule. But the advantage for a national champion, if you're only going by who wins the national championship, and that's your only evaluation of a league, the Big Ten has the advantage for a team that's really on top. Let's take Ohio State right now. Because there are 18 teams in the league and not 16, you're not going to play all the powerhouses every year. And the league tends to be top-heavy. It's devoid of heavyweights, right? Who are the heavyweights in the Big Ten? Ohio State and Michigan. Penn State, kind of a heavyweight, but we know the rap on Penn State, right? That they're really, really good, but they haven't been great in a long, long time. Fair? Like, really, really good. But haven't broken through.
Right. They're always in the mix, but James Franklin has this thing about not winning big games, right?
That's the rap, right? Whether fair or unfair.
But so, they're in the conversation.
They're in the conversation, but I think if... And then USC, right, who's been in a down phase. Tell me the other heavyweights in the Big Ten.
Well, Indiana thought they were a
heavyweight. Right, but that Indiana, we know, the history of Indiana, that was a great story.
Correct.
In and of itself. Great story, and we'll see if they can sustain. But Indiana football has been an easy out for the Ohio States and the Michigans most of the decades at a time. But take that crop of teams, Northwestern, Indiana, even Iowa, who's solid and wins quite a few games every year. They're usually not in the national picture. You know, you've got your up years from Michigan State, but and they're rock solid. I don't know if I would call them a full heavyweight. Now, D-Mace might differ, but I think they're, you know, year in and year out. Wisconsin, really, really solid. But I think the SEC is deeper, right? There's more teams that really throw ridiculous resources at programs. So my point would be, on a given year, Ohio State is going to have an easier path most years than an SEC team, because there are more programs that can knock you off on a Saturday year in and year out in the SEC, which I gets back to my question. With Texas and Oklahoma now in your mix, two more heavyweights, are you going to eat each other up and decrease your chances year in, year out, percentage-wise, of winning a national championship?
Gino on our text line, and it's a long text, so I will do my best. I will try to do it justice. Gino says, wait, let me see if I'm hearing you right. SEC homers who used to say the Pac-12 was weak because they would beat each other up, and they say the same thing about the Big 12. Now the SEC wants a pass because they beat each other up. Before it was the SEC won the chip regardless of how top-heavy it is, equals best conference. Big 10 wins two in a row, but now chips don't matter. SEC is better because of the depth, and they beat each other up. Same song, different tune from SEC homers.
I think the new tune is that now you have to win minimum three playoff games on top of getting there. Instead of getting there and then having to win two playoff games, you got to win three, sometimes four.
Did we mention Oregon in the Big Ten conversation?
No, that's a heavyweight. That's a legit heavyweight.
Thank you, unnamed texter.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So
Oregon's legit. Most years in the mix, they have the resources. I look at all these things, right? Resources, consistent performances. How often are they in the mix? I still think you have a deeper list of teams in the SEC, especially with Texas and Oklahoma added to it.
Mike in Lebanon says, I've always cared more about the SEC championship than the national championship.
Really? Really?
Who's to say?
I mean, to each their own, but I don't hear that a lot.
One texter says, Nebraska could be just like Tennessee. Started being great, but they got to get their crap together.
I think it's that remains to be seen. Do we think that they could ever get back to what it was, quote, back in the day, 70s, 80s, mid-90s? I don't know. It's been a long, long time, right?
Where's Eric Crouch when you need him?
That's fair.
That's the only Nebraska player I could name off the top of
my
head.
Yeah, so I guess, and he would stretch into the early 2000s. He was a great player. But consistently, it's been hard for Nebraska for a couple of decades now to get into this mix.
615-737-1025. We will continue this conversation with our dear friend, Jonathan Hutton, who is at SEC Media Days in Atlanta. So we will link up with Hutton coming up next. We'll continue this conversation with him. I would love to get his perspective on the state of college football, the state of the SEC. Also, I want to know about all the hot goss going on at SEC Media Days. And Hutton's usually good for that. So we'll get to that next.
Is the Iamale drama moniker, is that swirling around? We'll have to ask.
We'll ask him. And
did you ask
not,
Chase and Big Joe to start getting that going?
I need to before they leave. Thank you for reminding me. 615-737-1025. This isn't just a concert, it's a cause. Trintix's Rock the Cradle helps give fragile newborns a stronger start and keeps moms close when it matters most. With Tim McGraw live on stage and your support behind every beat, Ascension St. Thomas is turning music into healing. Tickets are on sale now at rockthecradlenashville.org.